When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
¿Qué pasa, cracks? ¿Qué pasa, campeones? Welcome to the Churros y Tácticas podcast. It's Monday, it's the 6th of March. We are here, Kianan and myself, to discuss Match Day 24 and everything that took place over the weekend involving the two biggest side in world football. Dare I say, why not? I just said it. It's also on wax. It's on record now. So it must be true, especially if it's coming from this mouth. For those listening, I'm pointing to my own. Barça win, take a narrow, nail-biting victory against Valencia. Yes, indeed, they do, to go 9 points clear. Let me be accurate and say we went 10 points clear. But luckily for Real Madrid, you guys managed to scrape point back. So it's not 10 points clear. It's 9 points clear. It's fine. Hay liga. Hay de todo. You guys are still in with a chance. Let me not get too big-chested and refrain myself from waving the victorious flag. Having said that, 9 points after 24 match days. What is that? Another 14 to go, Kian? Is that right? 14? We play 38 in total?
Yeah.
And
no, it can't
it's looking good for
there's not that much football left, is there?
I want to say that.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. Yeah.
In any case, needless to say, we do have a lot to go through because nothing is guaranteed. I am not, of course, here waving the title flag just yet. The game was not what we wanted to see. I'm very curious to hear about Real Madrid, or as you say, Real Betis and Real Madrid. What took place in Benito Villamarín, and there's a whole bunch of other stuff. Kian, I just opened my laptop as I got home, and all of the headlines read Neymar out for the season. Neymar Jr. crashes out during crunch time of season once again. What a career or end of his career this fantastic once fantastic football player is having ever since, I would say, he moved from Barça. What was that, 2017, I think, around, to make his move to Qatar Saint-Germain. Some will call it fate. Others will say what goes around comes around. But sad end to his career. Not to say that he's done, but man, a massive blow.
That sounded very evil, like the way you said it. Like it's just like, oh, like you're just happy. This is karma. Like I'm so glad that he just, this
not
happened
happy.
To him.
Well, not happy, but he should have never left, and he should have. Anyway,
fuck it. Look, shit. It's. I mean, Neymar, let's not pretend he wasn't.
So much
when
that comes with
PSG. He was pretty damn. I mean, like that year where he took them to the final, essentially, where he destroyed.
Peak Neymar is at Barca. It's same for Ronaldo.
I'm not saying.
Come on.
No. I'm not saying you're not wrong, but let's. I think his peak can be extended to the first couple years at PSG too, where he was amazing. Like, remember that year that when PSG got to the Champions League final, he was unbelievable in the knockout rounds, in the build-up to that.
Yes.
Let's not pretend he was just a complete ex-footballer at PSG. He was amazing. And also coming back off an amazing World Cup, by the way, where he was incredible. But you and I predicted this. We had an entire podcast about Neymar is not going to age well because he just is complete. The way he plays football, he will break down eventually because people just kick him and kick him and kick him and kick him, and he's not.
Yeah, it's. Go on. Sorry.
And he's not that physically imposing either. Like you know, to be able to deal with all that stuff. And let's be honest, I don't think he takes care of his body that well. I don't think that's a hot take or judgmental. I think that's correct. Did you see that thing where the other day when I believe it may have been after PSG lost to Bayern Munich in the first leg, And apparently Mbappe does this huge team talk and takes the team aside. Like, it's like, guys, no more junk food, no more this. And then that night, Neymar's Instagram story is at McDonald's.
McDonald's. But he tops that up by going out to play in a poker tournament after his McDonald's sesh. So he's binging on Mickey D's. Then he's out in the early until the early mornings playing this poker tournament. And that's Neymar for you, you know, and that's quite frankly.
Maybe that's us too if we were footballers. Maybe.
Yeah, but listen,
Diego,
to this.
do you think you would age like Neymar if you were a footballer, or do you think you would age like Modric? Could go either way.
I don't know. Yeah, it could go either way. And I think there's a time and place where temptations, you cave into, you know, temptations and cravings, and especially at a young age with infinite amounts of money and with all the temptations in the world flocking, you're throwing themselves at your feet.
Yes. I also think he was misguided.
Sure.
I don't think his father was the best agent nor influence. Yeah, yeah. And I think it really matters how you were brought up and who's around you at all times, who's surrounding you, what kind of messages are you getting every day.
Look, you compare Neymar to a Messi, for example, and here's a Messi that is very much protected, you know, very much from the Messi clan. Even his wife is his longtime girlfriend from Rosario. So, but, you know, I guess the values that were surrounding Messi was family, you know, family sort of first and stick within a closely knit group and take care of yourself, take your job and your role and your day-to-day serious and don't cave into temptations, give into temptations and really try to be the best you can be, I think, was probably the message that he would have grown up in. Whereas Neymar, as you rightly put, and unfortunately, this is I was trying to shoehorn this in. When you look at the Brazilians, the that have passed through football throughout history, I feel like it's unfortunately for them quite often the case where they don't maybe have that kind of stability. Or those values, they're not exposed to those values or they're not instilled upon them. And we see a lot of these football players cave into temptations from the best. I'm talking, you know, your Ronaldos, your Dinos, even Romario.
I mean, you're listing a bunch of Brazilian players. Do you think it's a cultural thing?
I do. That's the point I'm trying to make. And I think, you know, and it's unfortunate. Adriano, man. He was the successor of Ronaldo. Look at him still to this day. I mean, what Brazilian, even legend, so past or present, can you put forward and say, this guy, you know, peaked. And I don't want to say had an exemplary career, living a life full of values and virtues. But let's just look at it purely from a sporting perspective. Maintained his consistency and his max like Messi and a Cristiano did throughout their career for as long or around that time. You know, I feel like Brazilian stars are flares. They are spectacular and then they fizzle out far too soon. Is that unpopular take? How would you?
No,
you
know, no.
I struggle to think of.
I think you're correct, and I don't like it. Part of me feels weird to say that because I don't want to, like, you know, fall into the stereotypical hole and get myself into trouble. And because I know that there are plenty of examples of successful Brazilian footballers who do take it more seriously and do age much better. Like, for example, like a Casemiro or a Thiago Silva, for example. But
Rivaldo, maybe you had more of a family surrounding. Anyway, go on.
Sure. I mean, Roberto Carlos has spoken about this.
Roberto Carlos.
No, but actually, Roberto Carlos himself, he's probably one of the better ones, but I don't think he aged that well, right? No. like he was also
he was known to smoke and drink, and physically
I mean physically he was a specimen, right? I mean he is one of the poster boys of like this guy is an absolute freak. But I think he could have aged better if he took care of himself. He actually spoke about this, like when Vanderlei Luxemburgo took over Real Madrid, the first thing he did, he said he training sessions at Valdebebas were at 10:30. He moved it to 7 a.m. and he also banned wine and beer and fast food. And at the time, Ronaldo Nazario and Roberto Carlos were there. Roberto Carlos actually took him aside and was like, hey, man, we actually don't do
you're
that
not
here.
Last long.
Yeah, no, he was like, no, he straight up told him, like, we're probably not going to abide by that. And you just should not do that here. And Ronaldo Nazario told him, actually, bro, we actually do, we have wine and beer, usually one or two a day after the practice. So it you don't even try. And he also said, like, we also like to sleep in. Like, these are this is a real story from someone who was there fully admitting, like, this is how we were. Like, you know what I mean? It's funny because, like, we always talk about, when the Galacticos failed, like, we talk about, oh, the squad was didn't have balance and structure, which all that was true. But we also talk about, like, these guys just, I don't know if these guys would get away with this stuff today. You know what I mean?
We're not professional. Yeah.
So anyways, my point was that Roberto Carlos also said in that same interview that, like, you know, this is part of our culture in Brazil. We have fun. We don't take life seriously. We laugh, we party. And this is pretty much how we are in every profession we have. So I you know, when someone like him says it, I will
Romario
tend to believe
said the
it
same thing.
Mm.
Mm. Romario said very similar. He said, I mean, there I have to go out, otherwise I don't play well. And there are some managers that deal with that better than others, and some managers I think that are maybe able to squeeze as much out of the orange for a very concentrated period or for a very short amount of time and the best way by maybe, you know, understanding that it's needed, that these players are peaking, you know, and they're in their early mid or late 20s, they're in their 20s, and they're phenomenal footballing talents. And they're in that phase where they're just on fire and you just let the mad scientist go to work and do their magic. And then that star that is so spectacular to look at just fizzles out.
But you know what the thing is? Like when Romario says, I have to go out in order for me to play well, he's delusional, to be honest. Like he does not actually have a circle of friends who was actually telling him, hey man, you're out of your mind. You're wrong. Right. This is dumb. This is just an excuse to go out. There is no scientific explanation for you playing better by partying. Like it's one thing. people, they need to be surrounded by,
so good.
They need to be stopped being surrounded by yes men and just be surrounded by people who are actually like coaches and physical experts, fitness experts.
Well, and exactly, Kim. Go on.
It's one thing to go out and not sleep. Fine. But there's like so much science about like when you start consuming alcohol and drugs, it's just you're basically accelerating the aging process. It's terrible for you. It's so bad for you. And that's like scientifically proven. It's also like it's not a when Romario says that, I think he thinks it's a flex. Like I think I've seen a lot of people, even amateurs, who take great pride in like just taking care of themselves in an absolute shit way and then showing up and dominating a game and being proud of that. Like, look how good I am. I don't even have to take it seriously. Yeah. And I'm so good. It's a flex. Yeah. It's a source of pride for these guys. But like, I don't know if you saw, but Mikael John Obi, who was obviously Hazard's former teammate, recently said that Hazard was the laziest player he's ever come across. And he would come to training and dominate. And like, that's not a flex. That's not something to be proud of because now Hazard is just an ex-footballer. If he wasn't lazy and if he actually took care of himself in the summer, he would still be playing at an elite level. And that's, I think, part of the problem is that these guys don't realize how much long-term damage they do by doing this. They just accelerate. Like, Ronaldinho should have been doing great things at age 35. We were robbed.
For sure.
Ronaldinho's peak was just a few years. That's it. He was one of the greatest players of all time in those few years. And it's a shame that we didn't get more of that. He just stopped getting to the point where Pep was like, hey, man, you got to go because I got this Messi kid coming up and I don't want him to learn anything from you. You got to go. That's a shame. That's a shame that we didn't see Messi and Ronaldinho together for a few years.
For longer. Yeah. What could have been? But yeah, no, so many things I wanted to jump in and say. First of all, I love that Hazard statement. Who mentioned that? Who said that?
John Obi Michael, his Chelsea ex teammate.
Okay. I wonder if he was watching Madrid. I mean, that's coming from a team that saw Cassano, you know, be hailed as the next massive superstar.
Antonio Cassano, but also prostitutes and donuts, pastries all every night. Nutella.
But with the Romario thing and the whole like flex thing, it's so true. So first of all, with Romario, I want to say that he didn't drink alcohol. Actually, okay. He was notorious for, you know, going out, dancing, partying, women, and showing up late to practices. But he didn't drink a drop of alcohol. That said, you know, obviously everything takes a toll at some point, and his level of seriousness or dedication faded very, very quickly. I mean, too quick also in his case. With the flex thing, I think you're spot on with that. And especially from athletes in their prime, in that age, we had a very similar thing, actually. When I say we, I'm referring to the high school rugby team that I used to play for. I played rugby for 4 years. And in the first 2 years, we were absolute shit garbage, just getting our heads kicked in consistently game after game. And it wasn't until we got this South African kid, I should really say man child, join our school and obviously our rugby team. And it was literally, you know, give the ball to Keith. It was similar to the early Chicago Bulls strategy, give the ball to Michael and just get the fuck out of the way. It was like that. It would give the ball to Keith, pass it to him, and just get out of his way because he fucking bulldozed all of our opponents. And we eventually became European champion with our high school. And that was our strategy. Now, why do I bring this up? It's because that's we sort of had this team philosophy or team motto that playing hungover, we actually played better than if we were sober. So we started to get really fucked up the nights before big away games, going into, you know, other cities, traveling throughout Europe, went to Belgium, went to France, went to England. And the only reason why we won those games was because Keith was there. The next year, he wasn't there. And we went back to sucking absolute garbage. So, but it did became this sort of motto, like, yeah, let's be hungover, play better that way. See, because we won it with Keith.
Yeah, but this is, I mean, obviously refutable because I hear what you're saying. Like, I had many teammates growing up. They had to show up to the game completely high. They had to smoke a few J's before they show up. Because that they said they would play better. They were more focused and locked in. But that's also because that's the state that you now put yourself in.
Associate.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, it's very similar to caffeine. Caffeine is obviously a lighter drug. But if you have to have coffee to do work because you work better that way, that's because your body is used to doing that now. Whereas someone who never drinks coffee is not dependent on that, you know? And so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But this is like, this is not.
No, in our case, it's an absolute joke. I'm not trying to justify. I'm not trying to say that there's substance here. Like it was clearly, you know.
I will say I really enjoy the movie Drunken Master. What is that one where Jackie Chan has to be loaded for him to fight? Is it Jackie Chan?
Yeah, I believe it is. I haven't seen it though, but the title. I mean, it's a martial art. It's an actual art, like a martial art form. The drunken kung fu, where, you know, it's a very drunken style, but they kick your ass. Anyways, I don't know how long we've been going. But we haven't talked about Match Day 24 at all.
I have a good transition. you mentioned that you're not ready to say that the league is over and you don't want to, you know, make your chest too big yet.
Jinx.
As a Real Madrid fan, I would not only like to declare that it's over. In my opinion, I think Real Madrid should actively lose the league at this point. Like, just really, really try to completely be out of it, even if we're not already. It's like, instead of saying we should fight till the end, Ceballos said this last night, Rodrigo said this, Ancelotti says we're going to fight till the end. In my opinion, you should come out and say we're going to actually forfeit till the end. Like, forfeit now. Like, just like, we're out. We're out of this. We're out of this thing. The more we believe that we're in this, the more we're going to try to play all of our best players in these games and drain their energy for the Copa and the Champions League. Just play Hazard and Mariano in these last few La Liga games. Just actively tank. I don't want even a trace of hope for us to actually think that this is a possibility. We're out. We're out. Actively throw the league now. Focus on the Champions League and Copa. The sooner we realize this, the better it is for the entire Madridista fan base. That's it. That's my take. Congratulations, Barcelona. Well, you're champions.
Jeez. This is no fun.
It is fun. Because it's not actually, like, for example, Sam Leverage was writing about how Atletico, over on Into the Calderon, how Atletico have started to play better now that they've only had to play once a week. They're out of Europe. They're out of Copa. Now they have 1 week rest in between games. They're playing well. Scored six goals on the weekend. Imagine if we could just pretend the La Liga game is just a friendly game where we throw on Hazard and Mariano and whoever else, give all these bench guys minutes and rest Modric and Vinicius and Benzema just for Champions League and Copa del Rey. Doesn't that make more sense?
Well, what if you start, you know, Atletico, who you said are, well, they're back in third, by the way. That's a pretty, phenomenal feat, I would say, for Cholo that was in very hot water not long ago and playing against the Real Sociedad side, the Betis side, and Villarreal, not to say Rayo Vallecano's had plenty of surprises and playing good football this season. Worked his way to third. I seem to remember that both you and I said that the top three would be Atletico, Madrid, and Barca in the top three.
Mm-hmm.
So they're coming good with that prediction. But what if they start gaining ground? I mean, they're only 8 points away from you. Real Sociedad 9 points, same as us, but then
you know
in
what?
Fourth.
If you're bench,
you can't be serious in this request.
I'm 100% serious. If your bench loses 8 point lead over Atletico, maybe you deserve to come third anyway. Maybe that's just what you get for being that bad. Our best case scenario is Hazard does some things and raises his value, and some poor team is completely tricked into bringing him this summer. That's our best case scenario. Our worst case is they're all so bad that an Atletico are so good, you somehow lose an 8 point advantage, in which case maybe you deserve to be third. 8 points is a decent amount of points, Diego. Come on. 8 points is a lot. Like, you have to be really bad to lose 8 point lead. I don't think that our B team is that bad to lose 8 points.
If they approach each game with the mindset that you just expressed, that you just laid out, I don't see why they wouldn't be able to lose.
But you would assume that these guys who aren't playing are coming out hungry because they don't get any other playing time.
But why would they be hungry? They know that they're being like tossed to the lions.
Hungry for selfish reasons, because they want to prove that they're still useful footballers. Plus, you throw some kids in there, too. It's not just, like, the washed-up stars. It's like, you know, throw some kids in there. Okay.
Well, knowing that that is not going to happen, what happened in the Benito Villamarín? Was it... look, I saw the match. I thought it was an entertaining match. Surprised that it stayed at 0-0, to be honest. had a bit of everything, and it had both sides creating chances and both keepers making big stops. I thought the draw was the fair result. I don't know the reaction of Madridistas. I don't know how disheartening this draw, 0-0 draw,
it's bad,
has
man.
Been for Madridistas.
It's not a happy
So things
camp.
Are bad.
It's not a happy fan base. You know, like I was actually talking to my wife earlier today, and I said, you know, people are just so angry or happy based on what a football team does. And like,
yeah.
Because like people are just angry. Last time people were angry. They're always angry. And we I feel like we're like the guys that I get yelled at because we're the guys of the podcast, you know? It's like our fault. And then
right.
I feel like if if people disagree with us, you know, like when we're winning, they don't get angry, you know? But if they disagree with us when we're losing, it's like it's just really like I don't get affected by it, but I was telling her like, you know, what is going on with these people that something that is completely out of their control, their life just goes into a spiral. If what's happening here? It, you know, I used to be like that. I'm not like that anymore. I don't like if like Real Madrid lose for 10 minutes, I'm like, fuck, you know, I start getting angry. After 10 minutes, I'm like, I forget about it completely, you know, but I didn't used to be like that. I used to really like for weeks, I would be depressed. If Real Madrid were knocked out of something or they lost the Clásico, but I don't feel that way anymore. So it's kind of weird that like now I'm in a position where it's my job and I'm working. And if Real Madrid are bad, all of a sudden it's just everybody's angry. And that's my job is having to deal with that anger, absorb it and not react to it in like by losing my shit, you know? And so everyone was angry.
You're Papa Kian, Papa Sobani. Trying to,
oh, I think apparently it's my fault that, that we didn't sign reinforcements. I think apparently. Anyways, what went wrong?
That's a fact. That's a fact.
That's a fact.
That's indisputable. Then,
what went wrong against Betis was similar stuff that's been going wrong against Atletico and Barca in the last two games. But ultimately, I think what really went wrong, the difference was like against Barca, we didn't have any chances. Against Betis, we actually had good chances, but we just shot everything into the sky. Rodrigo had a great chance. Benzema had a great chance. Vinicius had a great chance. Ceballos had a great chance. And our shooting boots were not on. But it is weird that we followed up scoring 5 goals at Anfield with 3 games of only 1 goal. And that 1 goal was Alvaro's header against Atletico at the end. Make sense of this for me, Diego. We beat Liverpool 5-2.
I know you're gonna
Manchester
say.
United beat you guys, and then Liverpool beat Manchester United 7-0. Like, who's like, what happens in a round robin between these four teams? What is the dynamic? We all just end up tied. We all have kryptonites.
I didn't see that game, by the way. I still need
me
to
neither.
Watch.
I was
what
shocked when
there.
I saw the scoreline. I thought maybe it was a mistake or unbelievable. I saw highlights. That's it. But it makes no sense.
It's crazy.
How does that happen?
Makes no sense. Makes
so
no sense.
So we can't beat Barca. Barca can't beat United. Liverpool can't beat us. It's just this rock, paper, scissors contest.
I think it's tough, man, because quite frankly, you know, it's tough for Madridistas. I understand if I put myself in a Madridista shoe and I'm looking at the Barca games, I look at a game like the one now on Sunday against Valencia in the Spotify Camp Nou, another 1-0 victory. It's the 8th 1-0 so far, or the game where Barca scored by 1-0.
Yeah.
It wasn't a pretty game for sure. It's not one of those games where we're going to be talking about the style the great football. It was a tough, nasty, you know, grinded out game again. And if I talk about the draw being a fair result, and the Benito Villamarín, a draw would have been a fair result last night in the Spotify Camp Nou too. Mm. And that's not just talking about the Kessié penalty or not call, the penalty non-call.
Mm-hmm.
In the, what was it, the deep 80th minute, late in the 80-something minute, where Kessié commits a foul inside of the box.
Yeah.
Was it on Hugo Duro? No, I forget on who it was. But, I
don't remember.
I
don't remember.
You don't remember. In any case, you know, there were other moments. And of course, yes, we had to play the last 35 minutes with 10 men down. And that allowed Valencia to push us in our 18-yard box and create chances. But also before that, leading up to that, there were moments, which, by the way, I should have texted you. I wanted to text you or tweet at you. You had your Koundé moment. It was Koundé.
But I don't care. I want the Koundé moment against us. I don't want it against Valencia. I want it against us.
It was Koundé with a terrible back pass that put Araujo in a very compromising position where he had to sacrifice himself for the team and force a red card, meaning that he won't be in the game against Athletic Club, which is played in a Catedral. My point being as well, like, I mean, for a Madridista, this could turn out to be a juice situation if you guys manage to pick up points in three, because these next two games against Athletic Club, they're eighth. We know how difficult it is to beat them at their own ground. In particular, Basque team, always gritty, fans 100% in it. It's one of those big stadiums in Spain. So not a guaranteed stadium where you take away points, let alone one. We've lost there in recent years. Right now the one that comes to mind is that ridiculous Chilena by what's his name, the retired forward,
Aduriz.
Thank you. And after that is the Clásico again. So we could, in theory, drop 6 points. I mean, it wouldn't be crazy to have two back-to-back losses.
No, I'm not there with you yet. But I did want to explore the Barca-Valencia game a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just thoughts on the game first before maybe some bigger picture stuff. But there was that the Ferran Torres penalty miss. So yep. I watched a lot of, because a lot of people were like, maybe Ansu Fati should have taken it, etc. And I think Ansu wasn't necessarily happy about not taking it. I watched a lot of Milan last season because I was watching Brahim play. And Kessié is a good penalty shooter. I think it should have been Kessié who took the penalty.
Yeah. A lot of people mentioned that, and it was even the commentators got into just how good Kessié is at taking penalty kicks. And there's a little bit of quote unquote mystery right now in terms of nobody officially has come out and said this is the order,
right?
But
Xavi did say Ferran was already predetermined. Yes,
he was. And I've heard that Kessié comes third on that list, the order being official order being Lewandowski, Dembélé, Kessié. And so it was a bit of a surprise. Again, nothing has been confirmed, but that if Ferran was the one that was supposed to take the penalty that day, which it might have been, then why would other players surround him and kind of like see if, you know, nudge him and test him, see if he can get the ball away from him. And you say that Ansu didn't like it or you know, didn't agree with it. I mean, he was the first one to come up to Ferran and give him a hug after he missed it. There's a little moment where you see Rafinha give a kiss to like the back of Ansu after he gets denied to take the penalty. People are like, Ferran is too arrogant and Kessié is there. Kessié is third on the list officially. And I don't know. Fuck knows what the order is, but there definitely should be an order. And I don't really know. I would have, knowing that Kessié is such a specialist, Ferran should have been like, take it, man, because, you know, I haven't scored in like 4 months and you're a specialist. I'm not necessarily in my best of form. I feel like penalty takers should be taken not necessarily by players that need that little boost. Like, I wouldn't have opted for an Ansu, but rather completely. With players that have confidence already. You know what I mean?
Completely agree, because everyone talks about, you know, well, this striker needs confidence, but we almost never talk about the fact that if that player who doesn't have confidence misses, what that further does to the damage to the confidence level.
Exactly. Yes.
Interesting thing about Kessier is that he, even when Zlatan was on the field, Kessier was taking penalties over Zlatan.
Wow.
So holy that, shit. That kind of tells you a little bit about the penalty kick status.
Says it all.
Yeah. You know, when I was watching the Valencia game, Diego, I have to admit, a thought entered my head. And it turned me into one of those Madridistas that I was complaining about earlier this season who say, I can't believe we're losing the league to this Barca. They suck. I was watching that. I was like, man, to these guys, I'm so ashamed. To these guys, 9 points? To these guys in a low block against the worst team in Spain? It's like, what is that? Like, how is this?
With 10 men.
Well, still, like 10 men against Valencia, like not against Bayern Munich, man. Like, come on. Anyways, that's besides the point. This Barcelona team, from a pure defensive standpoint, what I'm about to say might shock somebody. So if you're sitting down, put your seatbelt on. You might fall off your chair. This Barcelona team might be one of the greatest defensive sides in the history of football. Nobody can score against them. It's insane. This is like peak Atletico 2014, where no one can score against them. 8 goals. Again, the disclaimer is this is purely in La Liga, not in Europe. But 8 goals.
Yeah.
And then, as I said, you and I disagreed on this a little bit, that I thought Barcelona were better than Real Madrid in the Clásico. If they defended like that against Bayern Munich and Liverpool and all these teams, they would have been still in Europe. I did want to ask you something that is related to this. Xavi said, I think, the day before the Valencia game, that if any other team in the world wins 1-0 at the Bernabeu playing like that, they would throw a party. But at Barcelona, the standards are different and there's expectations. And I still fundamentally disagree with him that there's nothing wrong with playing this way. And I don't know what's the obsession with playing a different way and losing. I don't understand. Help me understand, Diego. Help me understand this, because I don't agree with him.
I mean, we talked about it the last time, and you know, and the comparison that I drew was sort of like, to bring up the same topic that we just touched upon before. It's kind of like family values or cultural values. It's people want to be entertained at the Cano. They pay a lot of money to play, to watch their football team win, but also entertain them and play a certain style of way in a certain manner that they have grown up with, that they respect. It's like a certain art, like a certain craftsmanship to the art form or the work, the job, the task at hand, that has to complete certain criteria in order for the public, the vast majority, to be fully entertained and deem it a worthy spectacle. And why do I, you know, draw the earlier comparisons to like family values or cultural, you know, values? It because, you know, each culture, each family have their own predicate, their own beliefs or belief system, the way that they see life should be lived, and the way that they deem, you know, you to have a successful life. Let's say, like, you need to abide by a certain set of standards and rules and meet certain criteria. And then I guess that's the only way I can describe that or help you understand that. That's and also, like, to stick with the football comparisons, it's very similar to the Dutch national side, where, again, you know, the World Cup numbers were some of the lowest in history, if not the lowest in history, which would, I shouldn't say the lowest. I don't have it here at hand. Remember reading that the ratings in Holland, in the Netherlands for the World Cup were some of the lowest in history because the people did not identify, relate, or enjoy the style of football that the Dutch team was playing under Louis van Gaal. Now, did the numbers go up as they advanced? Sure, obviously, as they do in a knockout round, things, you know, more people tune in, but they still didn't meet the numbers and figures of prior World Cups. And a lot of that, you know, when polled, where people were like, this sucks. We don't enjoy watching this kind of football or a country play this way.
I think those are valid points about the idea of entertaining the Camp Nou or whatever. I guess from my fundamental disagreement is that, well, I don't know if it's a, obviously, I don't think you necessarily only mean Camp Nou. You could also mean just Barca fans watching the TV if it's at the Bernabeu, for example, too, right?
Of course.
But I guess exactly. I guess my fundamental disagreement is that you can only be entertaining watching this style of football. Like, it's always been weird to me that you'd rather lose playing a certain way than win playing a different way. It's still hard for me to accept that. And I don't think I will ever accept that, to be honest with you. But counterattacking, high-flying football can be just as fun as dominating possession. In fact, like, for example, Real Madrid had, 65% possession in the Clásico? I had an infinite amount more fun seeing Gareth Bale flying in the counterattack and scoring goals with 30% possession than I did watching that game. That game drove me nuts. I was not like, wow, wow, amazing, wow. I was not I was not out of my seat seeing these passes. But I was out of my seat seeing Bale flying on the counterattack. So I guess that's where my fundamental disagreement is why does it have to be this way? Why this way?
Yeah, it's the teachings, man. It's just sort of like, and it won't be 100%, as in if you poll Barca fans, all the Barca fans in the world, it won't be 100% that agree that this is the way and only way to dismantle and humiliate, if we can, and dominate our opposition and win the game of football. I was away for a weekend, as you know. On Friday, we did a remote pod. And funny enough, I was skiing, and at some point in time, I was in a chairlift with three dudes. We're talking about the Clásico, and one of them thoroughly enjoyed the win and the way, and they got into a discussion, or not really an argument, but they talked about, you know, winning that way. And he was like, what? He said, literally said, you know, I couldn't care less. The fact that we win and frustrated them and played this way, para mí, mira, mucho mejor, or like, you know, the better, or just as well. So, I, on the other hand, yeah, I do fall more in the camp of trying to respect that philosophy that was instilled by Johan Cruyff, that the Masia largely, in part, abides by. And we see also in other sections and in the Femini team. And it's just sort of like, the 7-0 of Liverpool against Manchester United, people talk about humiliation. Oh, the humiliation. I felt that similar feeling, like the 5-0 against Madrid in the Camp Nou, or the 6-2 in the Bernabeu, where it was just like, you know, Madrid were chasing shadows. And the passing, the running off the ball, the movement, the anticipating, passes, running into space, the rondos that we saw where you see Cristiano frustrated, he's like, he can't even see the ball anymore. He's feeling sick to his stomach. He's getting dizzy. he's throwing his hands up in the air because he can't even smell the ball, let alone touch it. That I love that. Like I thoroughly enjoy.
I think you're right to enjoy that. But okay, so here's another point, is that to play that way against the best teams, you need to have the best players. Well, you did have the best players in that era. You had Xavi, Iniesta, Messi, etc.
I don't
Dani
agree
Alves.
With you. I don't
no, but
agree
look,
with
okay,
you.
Okay, look,
because
for
the
example,
way let me just say this and then make your point. The way Ajax beat Madrid in the Champions League when the game that you were present, they played that way, and they were not Xavi, Iniesta, or Messi on the field, and it was just marvelous to watch.
No, you're right, but it didn't work later against Tottenham, and it doesn't know and
that's harsh, bro.
No, but look, but and then Ten Hag lost more players in the transfer market because the rest of Europe was like, wow, these guys are good, and it just wasn't as successful later. And even at Barca, it's highly dependent on if Pedri is on the field. If Pedri's not in the field, you don't play that way at all. And I wonder, like, how is it possible that the system falls apart that badly with one great player out of the lineup? If it was really the system works, then it should work with, like, the squad you have regardless on the field, right? Am I not wrong in that? Like, you need a Pedri-caliber player for this to work?
But I think it does work. We saw it in with Xavi in the 4-0 in Bernabeu, or in the Super Cup, or I mean, we've seen it multiple times with Xavi. We see it with other teams that implement the similar style of football, you know, from Bayern, from City, to again Ajax. I mean, Napoli at some point.
Pedri was on the field in the
4-0. Was playing a very similar style of football.
My point is, again, like, Pedri was on the field that day. He was on the field in Super Cup. Mm. It seems like without him, you just can't play that way against the best teams. Mm. And that's my point.
So you're talking Barca in specific in this example.
Yeah, I mean, well, like, for example, with City, that's a system that really, irrespective of who's on the field, that system works, right? And I just don't know if Barca have the resources to play like that all the time. You and I had a big discussion. Like, I'm asking a genuine question. You and I had a discussion about this a couple of weeks ago. What happens if Pedri is not in the field? And it's like, it's a completely different team without him. This is a real concern, in my opinion, because Pedri is a player that famously went, like, so long without missing a game. He was playing, like, every single game for, like, a long time. I'm going all the way back to the Euros, you know. And it's just, like, this guy. And then a lot of people were like, well, at some point, does he just burn out and get injured? And that eventually started happening. So what's the plan B? Because Kessié can't play like Pedri does. And so, these are just genuine questions, man. I'm just kind of speaking out loud. I haven't thought about it too deeply,
I guess,
but
sure. I mean, look, with Pedri out, you're missing one of the best four players on Barca right now. Top three, top four players on the team, hands down. You have Gavi, you have Frenkie, and you have Bussi. You still have three very capable midfielders to interpret the style of football that Xavi is implementing.
Against most teams, yes. But against teams that are a different caliber, I don't think that's the case. We saw this against Real Madrid. We saw this against Real Madrid and like, there was no control you guys had in that game. And it just, like, it feels like the system kind of falls apart without like one or two players. And that, I guess that's my point.
Well, there's no denying that there have been right out ugly games this season. But my rebuttal will be that this is still early days. It's early days for Xavi. It's early for this team. The conditions are still very difficult. And despite all of those, with all of those adversities or all those hurdles, obstacles, Xavi is still, at this point in time, the second most successful Barca coach in history at this point in the season, only being surpassed by Luis Enrique, who at this stage had 40 points, right? He actually has one more point than Pep. After his, and by that I mean after his 50 games in La Liga as in charge of head coach for Football Club Barcelona. Astonishing numbers is what I'm trying to get at. So maybe, you know, not as vistoso, not as eye-catching as we want yet. Maybe he's working from the defense up that you hail arguably one of the best in history. Pues muy bien. I'm patient. I have trust in the process right now. I have trust in the process. I'm patient. I think we've seen evidence and plenty signs of the football that we want to see and expect. Has it been as consistent? No. But in the process, we're picking up points and our defense is one for the record books. So let's keep it going.
We have a patron question to get to. Do you want to anything else before we move off the topic? Do you want to say about this?
No.
All right.
No, just be patient, Kian. You will see the football.
I don't care to be patient with your team. I don't care.
You'll see it.
Our patron, Adrian Rios, says, a question for Kian. Let's say the club asks you to pick one left back and one right back to keep from the following list. Right back, Carvajal and Vasquez. Left back, Mendy, Alaba, and Nacho. Pick only one of each with the others being sold in the summer and explain your choices. Okay. Just want to say that I don't feel strongly about either Carvajal or Vasquez or get too excited with those two names necessarily. So I don't, but I'm going to pick Carvajal because my plan would be in keeping Carvajal would be to buy a right back who's better, younger, and then Carvajal can be the guy who comes in every now and then as the experienced guy who can defend and do some things and just work really hard in a veteran presence. But then he would come off the bench and not be the starting right back. A better right back would come in. Left back, it's kind of unfair to put Alaba in this conversation and make me choose because I don't think he's the left back. I think he's a center back. I would keep Mendy because I would assume Alaba would just be center back. I would sell Nacho, which is it's a blasphemous thing to do at Real Madrid because he's such a beloved figure. But Mendy is still, to me, one of the best defensive wingbacks in the world. And Fran Garcia is coming in. So you kind of have the Coen Trout Marcelo dynamic in that one is someone who can help you with offense and Mendy is another one who can help you with defense. And you have two options there. So those are my explanations. Diego, do you have any?
So in the end, you agree with Lucho. Nacho is a no-go. Get him out of here.
If Nacho was in that Spain team, we'd be talking about France-Spain World Cup final here instead of France-Argentina.
Here's a question.
And Messi wouldn't have won the Ballon d'Or for no reason.
Here's a question for you. A serious question. Would you pay $80 million for Tchouaméni right now?
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. Please make sure that you tune in on Friday for our Churros, Patreons only, to hear part two on why Kian Sobani would pay $80 million for Tchouaméni today. Because I can't wait to tune in and hear the explanation for that.
It's pretty easy, actually. But sure, if you want to save it for Patreon edition, we can. We have no midweek games, right? Is there Champions League this week?
No. Well, there's Europa League. It's Betis United. So,
that's good. Cool. Well, bro, this is there's Champions League this week. We got Chelsea, Dortmund tomorrow. We got Bayern, PSG on Wednesday, but no Spanish teams, I guess. So Friday,
Champions League business.
Friday, what we could do is we can do a mailbag, ask our patrons to submit questions, and they can ask us whatever they want, and we're going to answer them. And the only people who can ask us questions are patrons. So if you're not a patron, you're like dying to like say something to me or Diego, don't waste your time. Unless you're over on patreon.com/churros y tacticas to ask your questions and also get access to the podcast. As always, the patron edition is the raw edition. It's the stuff that can't be said publicly. It's the stuff behind the scenes. It's all the secrets. It's, yeah, I'll just leave it there. Make sure you're a patron. Diego, it was fun, man. Thanks for taking time out of your day, as usual. We'll talk soon. Take care.
No doubt. Thank you. Thank you, listeners. Peace.
Sports Social Podcast Network.